coming up.
This is Only a Game. I'm Bill Littlefield. Among the subpar sports disasters has been the dousing of the Masters as a result of rain. In Augusta on Thursday, round two is still not complete. Mike Weir currently leads the tournament at 6 under par. Tiger Woods, going for his third green jacket in a row, stands at 2 over. The attempts of Martha Burke and the National Council of Women's Organizations to force the Augusta National Club to admit women have split Augustans. Restaurant manager Allison Green, the founder of Women Against Martha Burke, joins me now from the Bull Weevil Cafe in Augusta. Welcome to Only a Game.
Thank you.
Also on the line from Augusta is Anna Hargis. She's a nurse and a local supporter of Martha Burke. Anna, welcome to Only a Game.
Thank you for inviting me.
Allison, on the protest lines this week, Martha Burke will be joined by Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Push organization and opposed by a man representing a splinter group of the KKK, apparently, and by an Augustan named Deke Wiggins and his group called People Against Ridiculous Protests. Why did you decide to start Women Against Martha Burke and join this group?
Well, I was a little offended by Martha Burke saying that she represents all women, so I started Women Against Martha Burke, and I've had over 1,600 women sign my petition that says that Martha Burke does not speak for them and that they support Augusta and Augusta National.
Now, when you say you support Augusta National, I assume that means, as far as you're concerned, they can let in whatever members they like and keep out whatever member applicants they like.
That's correct, and I support the gender separation there. You know, they're a private club. My money is not going into that club, and if they choose not to have, at this time, female members, I'm okay with that because they are a private club. And I just feel like, you know, as a woman, I don't need a membership in a male-dominated golf club to feel more like a woman.
Anna, we asked the National Council of Women's Organizations to give us the names of some supporters who live in Augusta, and yours was the only name they could come up with. Are you alone among Augustans in your support of Martha Burke?
No, there are some women that feel the same way that I do, that women ought to be admitting. But a lot of times women are afraid to speak out, especially here in the South. As a matter of fact, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution is running a series about women and how women only earn a percentage of what men earn and how women vote, but we don't have representation in statewide or across the country in positions. So therefore, a lot of women are afraid to speak out.
And you feel as if there's really a direct kind of connection between issues like that and being able to join the Augusta Club?
Oh, definitely. Do you remember USA Today did a list of Augusta National Golf Club members? And it covers every part of our everyday working life. It's like prestigious law firms, banking corporations, major government contractors, oil companies, telecommunications, insurance companies, railroads, stock management corporations, appliance corporations, media corporations, real estate. It goes on, and they even have former politicians. These are corporations that affect our everyday lives.
Mm-hmm.
And if they feel like women are worthless in their private lives at Augusta National, I can only assume they feel like women are worthless in their corporate businesses.
Well, why is it that so many Augustans who have spoken out seem to support the club?
In Augusta, people rent their homes. Anywhere from $2,000, $4,000, $10,000, $15,000. They make money off the Augusta National.
Mm-hmm.
And like with Allison, I'm sure her restaurant is enjoying golf patrons, and that's fine. But also Augusta has to survive the other 51 weeks a year.
Allison, this is an interesting point. There's no doubt that the Masters Tournament is important to Augusta. According to the Convention and Visitors Bureau, the tournament brings in as much as $100 million to the local economy each year. How much does the money affect how local residents view the club and this current issue?
Well, I don't think anybody's opinion of the club is directly related to the amount of money it brings in. Of course, we get excited about the increased revenue, and we're able to survive the rest of the year because of this one week. We kind of look at it as Christmas in April for us, and it's really an emotional issue as well as a financial one. I can look back on my childhood, and I just have such fond memories of Masters Week and the anticipation in the air around Augusta. And it's just so wonderful that the tournament's here.
Well, it's funny. You talk about your childhood. Is part of the feeling we don't want anything to change? We want it to always be the way it has been here?
There's nothing wrong with change, and I feel that eventually Augusta National will have a female member, but I don't think Martha Burke should be spending so much time on this issue. And Anna pointed out a lot of good things that women need help with, and women do need a stronger voice, and we look to Martha Burke to provide that for us. But I'm not really sure that women are going to benefit off of being allowed into a private golf club. And may I add that over 1,000 rounds of golf were played by women at the Augusta National last year.
So they can come and play as guests. They just can't be members.
Absolutely. It's never been an issue. There's something to say for tradition in this town, and I'm okay with that.
Anna, do you buy that interpretation? It's never been an issue?
I know it's been an issue with me. I've been in Augusta over 20 years, and I'd often wondered why they did not have women members. You know, we don't have any former presidents that are members of this club. And you remember John Snow, he resigned from the club before becoming Treasury Secretary.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's because they did not want to associate with a place that discriminates against women. And the mindset of these men out there is our private club, and we're going to do what we want to do. But I want to say one thing is, as people file in that gate out there, those Augusta National members are laughing. Why? Because they have the most prestigious golf club in the world, and they don't have to pay for it. How? The Augusta is supported by people who come through the gate and who buy souvenirs. In yesterday's Augusta Chronicle paper, sir, there's a list of the souvenirs and the price. Yes, men's shirts are anywhere from $49 to $139. Women's shirts are $48 to $129. And you can give a personal check, MasterCard, Visa, and American Express, and they even have automated teller machines that are near the gate.
So they'll sell women's shirts with the Augusta logo on it, but they won't let them be members.
Exactly. And this is a corporation. This is a business.
Well, I have to add to that there are women that work in that pro shop and selling that merchandise.
Mm-hmm.
There are women that work for American Express that are processing those charge cards. And for every single member at Augusta National that works for a major corporation, not a single one of those corporations discludes women in their business. And to boycott them is completely unfair to the women who work for those corporations.
The women are good enough to work at the Augusta National or work for these corporations, but no woman is good enough to be a member.
On Wednesday, Augusta National Chairman Hootie Johnson brought up what I think is an intriguing possibility. Long-hitting teenage star Michelle Wee says that it's her goal to win the U.S. Public Links Championship and get an invitation to the Masters Tournament, a condition which Mr. Johnson says he would honor. Anna, how do you feel about the possibility that a great female player would be competing in the Masters before women could join?
I think it'd be wonderful. Maybe it would open up their minds. Maybe at watching a woman play, maybe some of the members might change their minds. But like I said, if you look at the average age, a lot of these gentlemen are in their late 50s, 60s, and 70s, and a lot of them is going to be hard to change their mind.
Anna Hargis is an Augustan who supports Martha Burke. Anna, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
And Allison Green is the founder of Women Against Martha Burke. Allison, I appreciate your taking the time to speak with us as well.
Thank you, Bill.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to this day of public radio programming. Remember to slide a dollar into the slot on your radio. And don't forget, public radio season tickets are on sale at your local station.
It would be a different world if listening to public radio was like attending a sporting event, if you had to pay before you could listen. But there are no turnstiles in front of your radio, which means that every so often we have to remind you that WBUR and WRNI rely on the continued support of listeners like you to keep going. So it's especially important that those of you who listen to Only a Game let us know that it's something you value, a program you want to keep enjoying by pledging your support. We're counting on you.
Somehow I feel I know that voice. True sign of spring, a PA system at a ballpark. Another true sign of spring, Red Sox opening day. Hopefully it'll get here. Dolores Handy here in the studio. With me is Mr. Bill Littlefield from Only a Game and Steve Ellman, assistant general manager here at WBUR. It is our spring fundraiser, an opportunity for our listeners who count on us for news and information to help pay for the news that they support. Give us a call at 1-800-909-9287.
Well, we're a little more than 3 months from the 10th anniversary of Only a Game. Congratulations, Bill.
Thank you very much.
Wow.
And in, you know, just to look back, the pledges that people just like you have made to WBUR and WRNI over the past 10 years have made it possible for us to make this program one of the most distinctive in all of broadcasting. There's no sports program like Only a Game. Your pledge this morning will help us keep it going. 1-800-909-9287.
Give us a call, 1-800-909-9287. We've been talking all this week about the distinctive voice of the BBC, the international perspective, the coverage of NPR News, WBUR, with the ongoing developments in Iraq, where a lot of other things are happening in the world around us. One of the big events in Boston every year is opening day at Fenway. Ray Charles, Lou Rawls, sons and daughters of people serving in Iraq and Kuwait, representatives of every branch of the military, sons and daughters of Red Sox legends, some Red Sox legends, understand the granddaughter of Babe Ruth, all those people at Fenway yesterday, and they couldn't pull off a baseball
game. The weather wouldn't cooperate, Dolores. I hope they have better luck today. You know, I wonder if there are some people out there, having heard that little bit we did a few minutes ago, who would prefer to slide a dollar into a turnstile somewhere every morning for public radio. It doesn't work that way. You can't slide a dollar into anything. To support WBUR and WRNI, you have to make a call. You have to make a pledge.
Well, just think about, though, a pledge of a dollar a day for the service that WBUR and WRNI provide all year long. That would be a $365 pledge. Well, tell you what we're going to do. If you make that pledge this morning, we'll send you an Only a Game fleece jacket as a way of saying thanks. All you have to do is call 1-800-909-9287, and we will send that jacket off to you with our thanks. Make that pledge now, though, for Only a Game and all of the services that you depend upon.
The best part about it, in terms of getting in, if you don't put the dollar in the slot, you still get the news here at WBUR.
We're not supposed to tell them that. They have to put the dollar in the slot,
because
at least,
we,
you know, metaphorically,
okay,
somehow.
Just want to let them know, but because we value them so much that we count on them to, what is it, your honor, as an act of honor, support for public radio, give us a pledge at what a contribution at 1-800-909-9287. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by ThoughtForms, recently named Custom Builder of the Year by Custom Home Magazine. Their work can be viewed at thoughtforms-corp.com. Feynman Remodeling of Arlington, committed to client satisfaction through innovations in architectural design, craft, and management. FEINMANN.com. And Cafe Escadrille, serving classic French and American cuisine in their gourmet room with an extensive wine list to complement dinner selections in Burlington, exit 33A off Route 128.
We're in the last quarter of our fiscal year here at WBUR and WRNI, and we've done very, very well in this fundraising drive. But every drive for the next 3 months has to be a success for us to end the year with a balanced budget. That's just the financial reality. The best way that you can make sure that the services here tomorrow, next month, next year, is to make a pledge right now. 1-800-909-9287.
Steve, I just want to pick up on something you said a minute ago. These Only a Game fleeces are really quite attractive. I gave one to my mother-in-law recently and immediately got a call from my sister-in-law who said, I want one too. And so they're going fast, even to the members of my family. And people better call now with their pledge. And, you know, we've got volunteers here chowing down on donuts and ready to take your call.
So make that call now, 1-800-909-9287.
You're a good man, Bill Littlefield, giving your mother-in-law wonderful gifts like that. Think of some of the gifts mothers-in-law get.
That wasn't a Mother's Day gift, was it, Bill?
No, it was just a Mother's Day gift.
Well, it is coming up.
Gift.
Give us a call, 1-800-909-9287, or go online at wbur.org. And thanks.
I'm Bill Littlefield. Coming up on Only a Game, our hockey analyst Helene Elliott muses over early upsets in the NHL playoffs. But first, figuring that nobody knows a boxer better than the guy up against him in the ring, journalist Stephen Brunt decided to ask some of Muhammad Ali's opponents about their battles with the champ. The result is Facing Ali, subtitled 15 Fighters, 15 Stories. Stephen Brunt joins me now from the studios of the CBC in Toronto. Stephen, welcome to Only a Game.
Thanks.
You write of Henry Cooper, the Englishman who fought Ali twice 40 years ago. It was a lesson about the nobility of having your finest moment, giving your best effort when it absolutely matters most. I gather that you feel Ali provided that opportunity to several of the 15 men with whom you spoke.
To all of them, I think, really, because of all of the things that were wrapped up in Ali, you know, not just as a fighter, obviously, and not just as the heavyweight champion of the world, for those who did fight him when he was the heavyweight champion of the world, but because, you know, there was so much other stuff wrapped up in Ali that for any of these fighters, when they stepped into the ring, and even, you know, even Tunney Hunsaker, even the first guy fighting Cassius Clay coming out of the Olympics, it was the biggest fight of all of their lives. It had to be. By definition, it had to be.
Karl Mildenberger, the German fighter who lost to Ali in 1966, said of the fight, quote, "I cherished him." But it's revealing, perhaps, that Mildenberger spoke of Ali in the past tense.
You know, Mildenberger's seen a fair bit of Ali in recent years. Ali has come to Germany. Mildenberger's a celebrated figure to a degree in Germany, not to the degree that his manager would like, but it is to a degree. And, you know, Ali's come over there and done promotional stuff with him, and he's watched Ali fade, you know, from the fighter he met in 1966 to the person that he is today. There was a sadness, a kind of an elegiac tone to a lot of, well, not just with him, you know, with many of these guys.
It's kind of ironic, isn't it, that Ali has suffered the damage that he's suffered, and he beat these guys, and these guys, by and large, seem to be in pretty good shape, with the possible exception of Hunsaker.
In terms of boxing, in terms of what boxing might have done to them, they're all pretty much intact. Mm-hmm. Every one of them, if you look at it, you know, Tunney Hunsaker has problems that resulted from a fight after he fought Cassius Clay, and he has dementia. He has Alzheimer's disease, which may or may not be related to boxing. Ken Norton has problems from brain injuries he suffered in a car accident, a terrible, terrible car accident. But if you take away those two, you know, really the other 13 are very much intact, have survived boxing, not necessarily intact in their personal lives and their entire lives. There's certainly some sad stories in there for other reasons, but, you know, boxing is only indirectly the culprit in their case.
In the chapter on Joe Frazier, you bring us up to date on the fact that Frazier has not accepted Ali's apology for the terrible insults that Ali heaped on him years ago. Do you share Joe Frazier's opinion that Ali's apologies haven't been sincere?
The Ali apologies that I've seen, you know, I haven't ever heard an Ali apology, and I guess that speaks to the fact that Ali is not, well, he has difficulty speaking these days. Mm-hmm. He does, period. And it's so we don't hear a lot from Muhammad Ali anymore in any circumstance. The written apology, which I think appeared on the op-ed page of the New York Times, I don't think was written by Muhammad Ali. I'm not sure who it was written by, but I think it came out of the Ali circle, but I don't think it had his stamp on it. And when Ali has reacted to Frazier, you know, Frazier has this incredible surface anger about Ali, and if you go through his story, you understand why he does. And I have a great deal of sympathy for Joe Frazier in this circumstance. But no, I don't think Ali has ever said, what I did to you was different than what I did to other fighters. I think that's the problem here, is that Ali, he mocked his fighters in kind of a fun way. We remember him calling George Chevallo the washerwoman, or George Foreman the mummy, or Ernie Shavers the acorn, and mocking them. You know, all of this stuff, it was fun, right? But when he called Joe Frazier and Uncle Tom, you know, when he called him a gorilla, when he talked about how ugly he was, that was different. And, you know, the other fighters, a lot of the other guys in the book talked about Joe, and they said, well, Joe was the one guy who didn't let it roll off. He didn't understand it was just part of the promotion. He let it get to him. But of course it got to him, because listen to those words and think of, you talk to Joe Frazier, and when I interviewed him, he directed the interview. Mm-hmm. I sat down with him. He said, you want to talk about all these things. You're going to want to talk about Manila or the 71 fight or any of these things. I'm going to tell you what we're talking about today. We're going to talk about where I came from in South Carolina, and how poor we were, and how desperate we were, and coming north to get a job, and having to buy your way into a job in a factory, and getting fired after winning a gold medal in the Olympics because you broke your hand in the Olympics and you couldn't slop out the slaughterhouse anymore where you were working. And I'm going to tell you about that stuff. And then you listen to what Ali called me, that he turned me into the establishment figure, into the white man's champion. You know, Ali, who came from a working class background, you know, who two parents never missed a meal that I know of, and calling Joe, turning Joe into the establishment guy, into the Uncle Tom, it cut very, very deeply, and it was different. So, you know, I think I understand where Joe's coming from, and I say I have a great deal of sympathy for him.
As you say, a lot of what Ali did was promotional. There's a story in the chapter on Chuck Wepner where Ali tries to get Wepner to call him the N-word so that he can jump up and you know, create some controversy before the fight. And Wepner says, I can't do that. Come on now. I got a lot of African-American friends here, pal.
That's right. It was on the Mike Douglas show, you know, during a commercial break. Yeah, he played that card a bunch of times. He tried to turn Jean-Pierre Coupman, this gentle guy from Belgium, of all places, undeniably, I think, the least talented fighter ever to challenge for the heavyweight title, had no kind of, just got completely lost in a lost world when they brought him to America. And he tried to turn him into a Nazi. He tried to suggest that he was a white supremacist Nazi racist. And Koopman just loved Ali. You know, he kissed him at the press conference.
He went across the room and kissed him with that after that charge, yeah.
Yeah, he loved him. He loved everything about him. So, you know, Ali would play those cards. And he was playing them to drum up interest in a fight. He was playing them to sell tickets. You know, he's Ali's great role model, as much as it might have been Ray Robinson or in the ring, in a lot of ways was Gorgeous George, the wrestler. That's where he got his shtick from.
Jean-Pierre Koopman, the Belgian about whom you've spoken, credits Ali with, quote, a human side, a kind of humanity in fighting. What did he mean by that exactly?
Well, I think in his case, what he meant is that Ali could have, and look, I don't think it was always true. I think there are instances when Ali didn't show that side, when he tortured poor Floyd Patterson in the ring. And Patterson, we talked about people who are damaged. You know, Floyd Patterson has Alzheimer's disease. That's why he's not in the book. You know, he tortured Ernie Terrell in the ring. There were people to whom he was exceptionally cruel in the ring. But in Koopman's case, you know, Koopman was being beaten up by his sparring partners. You know, he had no chance. And Ali, in a certain way, took a little bit of pity on him. He was a little bit merciful in the way he conducted that fight. He knew what he had in front of him, and he didn't hurt him. And I think Koopman was the most relieved guy in the world just to get out of the ring and not really be hurt.
George Foreman, of course, has gone on to various other opportunities post-boxing. But in the chapter you write about him, it seems as if sometimes he may wonder about some of the opportunities he's accepted. He tells you at one point about people who recognize him and say, hey, George, I love your grill. And that's not entirely gratifying, I gather.
Well, it's funny for him, I think, to be known to an entire generation as a salesman of hamburger grills, and he sells thousands of them. You know, he's great at it. but he's the great. He's an interesting guy because, you know, I met George the first time I encountered George. He wasn't the huckster. He hadn't turned himself into the kind of jolly giant. He was what he was when he fought Ali and Zaire, which was a mean, nasty, intimidating guy. And at some point along the way, and even in his comeback, even after he came back to make money for a youth center, you know, he'd had a religious conversion experience. He walked away from boxing for 10 years. God told him to take a different path, he says, and he did. Came back after 10 years as a complete laughingstock. Even then, at the beginning of that, he was a sullen, difficult guy to deal with. And then somewhere along the way, he understood that there was a different George Foreman, or at least a character called George Foreman that he could play, that was endearing to the public. He reinvented himself. And it's a great redemption story. You know, I'm not like all redemption stories. You can take it any way you want. But George has decided to frame his entire life and the loss in Zaire that everybody knows from when we were kings as the fall, the necessary fall. George had to lose. If he hadn't lost to Ali in Zaire, Ali could not have become Ali. And if he hadn't lost, he wouldn't have made the journey that he made back, as it turned out, right back to the heavyweight championship of the world. So it's a nice parable. It's a preacher's story. And, of course, you know, that's what George is in a lot of ways, a preacher who also is a great capitalist, I guess.
One of the more poignant stories in the book belongs to Joe Bugner. He tells you that he hated boxing, especially the business side of it. I wonder how many fighters, if they were candid, would say just that.
Well, I'll tell you, my experience with fighters, and I think it would apply to everybody in this book, is that very few people choose this path. There are very few people who have a natural inclination to get in the ring and try and make a living because it's a terrible thing to have to do. It's nasty. It's brutish. You have to go against all your better human instincts. You can't show compassion when someone is hurt in front of you. Instead of saying, are you okay? You have to move in for the kill. People box because they have to generally. Well, invariably. There are economic reasons why people fight. It's the one sport where you can make a living tomorrow. You can become a professional fighter tomorrow as long as you can pass a physical. You don't have to go to college. You don't have to make a team. You don't have to do anything. So people who fight I have found very few people who you would say, you know, if this is the only thing they could do, this is the only place they could possibly be. Circumstance invariably drives them into the ring. Look at someone like Jürgen Blin, you know, who's in the book. Again, someone who's completely forgotten and talking about his desperately poor existence in Germany and the life he had and going into the ring just to try and find some kind of a path, to some kind of a way that he could define himself and some kind of a way he could feed himself. It was... It's a tough choice. It's a choice that most of us wouldn't ever make. They're far more courageous than I will ever be, every one of them.
Stephen Brunn is the author of Facing Ali, subtitled 15 Fighters, 15 Stories, published by Lions Press. Thank you very much for speaking with me.
Nice talking to you.
This is the legend of Cassius Clay, the most beautiful fighter in the world today. He talks a great deal and brags indeed of a muscular punch that's incredibly speedy. This brash young boxer is something to see, and the heavyweight championship is his destiny. He is the greatest.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Thermo Electron, the scientific instruments company, with a mission to advance drug discovery, improve manufacturing, and protect people and the environment on the web at thermo.com. By Boston Scientific, working to deliver what's next in less invasive medicine. More information online at bostonscientific.com. And by Volunteers of America, locally helping people make positive life changes through support from late model vehicle donations. Information at voamass.org. There is more of Only a Game just ahead, but this is WBUR Spring Fundraiser. I'm Dolores Handy. Here with me in the studio is Steve Elmet, Assistant General Manager, and Bill Littlefield. Good morning again.
Good morning, Dolores. One of the things we want to remind you about during this wonderful broadcast of Only a Game, the insight and the character of the program really does depend upon your pledges, because half of the costs of everything here at WBUR paid for by people just like you. So we need you to start off this day with a nice, warm, fat pledge. If you can start with a pledge of $60, that'd be $5 a month for a year's worth of Only a Game. That would make us all feel good, and it will help keep the program coming. 1-800-909-9287.
It's like a trip down memory lane listening to Muhammad Ali. Bill Littlefield, you do amazing things on that program, and that's why I'm so grateful to be able to talk about that when I tell people I work at WBUR. I work at a station that I'm proud to be a part of the product, and they tell me that's why I listen, because it's so great. And Only a Game is just one of the shows that they mention. But we appreciate you and all of those who tell me that this is your opportunity to help support what you say you love and you count on. Give us a call, 1-800-909-9287.
Thank you for those very kind words. Stephen Brunt is a wonderful writer, and everybody that I've spoken to about that book has said, what a terrific idea, because who could know a boxer better than the guy who stands against him in the ring? And he went and talked to 15 guys and got a very important and surprising portrait of Muhammad Ali, a character who's still very much center stage in people's imaginations. So that was a fun one to do. And we got a lot of good books. We talked to a lot of quite remarkable writers, and that's part of the fun of doing the job here.
You know, one of the things about the show is that it is literate. Not only is Bill one of the best writers around, but he brings in a lot of people like Robert Pinsky and John Updike and Roger Kahn and Roger Angel. Very, very interesting people who have things to say about sports. It has given the show a distinctive voice over 10 years, and it's really the Only a Game perspective is one of the most distinctive in all of broadcasting. Your pledges are what made it possible. Your pledges will keep it here for the years to come. 1-800-909-9287.
And sometimes it's just the little asides that tend to be great newsbreakers. I remember the Friday night fights, sitting there with my father watching them on TV. Floyd Patterson was a fixture on those. And to hear you say that he has Alzheimer's, I was not aware of that. There's just so much that you take in when you listen to a show like this. It's not just the scores, even though you get the scores, but it's the stories, it's the people. You count on that. That's what you look forward to on Saturday mornings and Saturday afternoons. Help support this kind of programming. 1-800-909-9287.
It's great to hear you describe the program that way, Dolores, because that was, of course, the reason that we put Only a Game together 9.5 years ago. We felt there are too many stories in sports to be limited merely to the people who open the paper to the sports section first, and we want to tell them in such a way that they are good stories, well told, the kind of stories that public radio listeners are accustomed to hearing on all the programs that they listen to and that they support. And that reminds me, it's time to talk about supporting this program, among others, right?
Absolutely, it is. It's one of those things, one of those guilty pleasures that we get when we have the opportunity to talk to you about fundraising. We also have the opportunity to talk a little bit about how great these programs are. But your pledges made it possible, and we never forget that. That's our responsibility to you, is to take your money and turn it into great radio. So call now, 1-800-909-9287. Consider a pledge of $1 a day for the service we provide all year long. For that $365 pledge, we'll send you an Only a Game fleece jacket. And one reminder, when you make a contribution to the fundraiser, you'll automatically be eligible to win a trip for two to Washington to have lunch with NPR's Neil Conan from Talk of the Nation. American Airlines is donating the round-trip airfare, and we will provide a night stay at one of the great hotels in the Capitol. So a great way to support, a great way to make your pledge. 1-800-909-9287.
Every so often, WBUR and WRNI ask you to ask yourself how much their programming is worth to you. But have you ever considered what your favorite programs might sound like without your support? We have, and so we bring you Only a Game on a Shoestring, Part 1. We think it might go something like this.
Now? Start now? Okay.
Like titans on the misty fields of yore, the offensive line assumes battle formation. The quarterback, with steely jaw and sweated brow, like winged victory, only with the head and both arms, reaches into the nether worlds, launching heavenward one holy ellipse, the description of an arc. A leap, another leap. Who will receive the sacred orb of leather? It's our guy. It's our guy. Touchdown!
See what I mean? We've heard the future, and it could be this bad. Don't let Only a Game become this twisted audio fantasy. Without you, we wouldn't be able to provide the in-depth, thought-provoking sports coverage that you count on. That's why we need you to go to the phones right now to pledge your support to WBUR and WRNI.
Give us a call at 1-800-909-9287. You love Only a Game. Only a Game. Step up to the plate. Show us again how much you appreciate this kind of coverage. Give us a call at 1-800-909-9287.
The fact is that it's really very, very easy to make that pledge, too. You make the call, or you can do it on the web at wbur.org. You just decide how much Only a Game is worth to you for a year's worth of programming. You put that dollar amount in the hands of the fine people who answer the phones, and that's all there is to it, really. It probably will take a minute of your time this morning. So make that pledge. Do it on a credit card if you like. That will put your money to work that much faster and save the paper that is involved in the transactions when you have to write a check. So do it now. 1-800-909-9287.
We should remind you that major support for Only a Game comes from Bicon Dental Implants since 1985, offering discerning patients and dentists options for same-day replacement of missing and compromised teeth. Information online at Bicon.com or at 800-88-BICON. Give us a call, 1-800-909-9287.
We are, about two-thirds of the way through our normal Only a Game time. That gives you one-third of the normal Only a Game time to pick up the phone and make your pledge. And I urge you to do so. All those folks who email and tell us how much they enjoy the program or call or mention it in some other context, Now's the time to put your proverbial money where your mouth has been, and we'd very much appreciate it if you would do so this morning.
And it truly is a team effort. You know, every week the show is produced, and Bill and Gary Wallach and the other producers involved, they do their job. We ask you to do yours now.
Give us a call at 1-800-909-9287.
I'm Bill Littlefield. Coming up on Only a Game, the bell rings for pro mountain bikers in Arizona. But first, I'm joined by our analyst, Charlie Pierce, for a look at the week's sports news. Hello, Charlie.
Hi, Bill.
Condolences are in order. Brave Marquette was swamped in its attempt to ascend from the Final Four to the Terrific Two in New Orleans. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the barbecue shrimp at Pascal Manali's is still fabulous. Actually, sometimes, what can I tell you? Sometimes you get hit by the whole train. And one nice thing, though, is that the Marquette team stuck around for the championship game.
Oh,
so they got the whole weekend in New Orleans and the whole Final Four experience, which I thought was fairly classy on their part and on the part of the school.
Meanwhile, on Tuesday, the women of UConn defeated arch nemesis Tennessee to earn a third NCAA championship in 4 years. I guess that despite some unusual early season rankings, the season ended up following form after all.
If there is a problem with the boom in women's college basketball, it is that the form chart generally holds. There was a little bit of intrigue. Texas coach Jody Conrad implied that Connecticut wasn't as good as LSU. Connecticut coach Gino Auriemma said a series of progressively sillier things since about the middle of February. So there was a lot of off-court things, but I think the transcendent moment on the court is how good Diana Taurasi of UConn is, and she is really good.
Oh, no question. Early this week, NBA Commissioner David Stern said that if the players don't agree to the contract the league has offered them by Friday, there will be no WNBA season. A serious threat, Charlie?
Well, yes, because of the WNBA's financial situation and hold on its niche in the market is very slender and depends completely on the goodwill of the National Basketball Association. I think Stern is playing a little bit, is overplaying his hand a little bit here. I mean, to create an ultimatum and then, you know, essentially give the union a take it or leave it offer, it's probably within his power to do it. And from a purely management standpoint, it's probably not a bad move, but it is kind of a smelly way to do business.
The fellow that everybody has tapped as the number one NBA draft pick, LeBron James, said this week that he had enjoyed watching the NCAA championship tournament so much that he might go to college after all. Is this a serious threat?
Yes, that sound you hear is college assistant coaches all over America grabbing their hearts again. I spoke with one coach who actually had designs on recruiting LeBron 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that after about 6 months, he just threw up his hands and said, why am I wasting my time, you know, taking all these drives to Akron? I think that the cooler, if somewhat more exploitive heads will prevail, and he will indeed enter the draft. The interesting thing, though, however, is that Carmelo Anthony of Syracuse has now moved ahead of LeBron James in the eyes of many scouts, largely through his performance in the NCAA tournament and the fact that he's physically more mature than LeBron. That was the debate du jour in New Orleans, if you had the choice. Would you take LeBron James or would you take Carmelo Anthony? I don't think there's any question. I would take Carmelo Anthony right now.
If Mr. James does go to college rather than play next year for the Cleveland Cavaliers, which is one possibility, he'll have a bigger fan base. Cleveland has apparently adopted an intriguing strategy for trying to retain the few season ticket holders the team still has.
It's having the players call the season ticket holders and ask them to be patient. You know, it's charming in its own way, but if I was a player, I would be very, very nervous. Number one, you can get screamed at like you're like sitting on like 100 different talk shows in one day. Or worse, you can be Carlos Boozer and call somebody and have the person say, "Who? You do what?"
You know, I forgot I'd own season tickets to that club.
Honey, it's Carlos Boozer on the phone. Yeah, right, Bill.
The NCAA hockey final is tonight, Charlie. It pits UNH, our neighbor to the north, against Minnesota. You have a pick in that one?
Oh, we have to root for the home team. It's something good to happen to the state of New Hampshire before the inevitable arrival of 9,000 presidential candidates over the next year and a half.
You've established that you're not inclined to take Halls of Fame too seriously, Charlie, but I am curious about your take on Meadowlark Lemon, perhaps the most famous globetrotter of them all, making it into the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Well, as you know, one of my suggestions for particularly the humorless and, as we will see later, now ideologically corrupt Baseball Hall of Fame is that we have a wing called the Fun Wing, where Bill Veeck and Mo Drabowski and Bill Lee and the rest of them would be ensconced. Apparently, the Basketball Hall of Fame has decided to integrate the Fun Wing ended up, yeah, he was elected along with Earl Lloyd. And I believe earlier the entire Globetrotters franchise has been inducted. Leon Barmore, Dino Monegan, Chick Hearn, the announcer. My favorite quote, though, comes from Robert Parrish, who says, "When I'm inducted, I'll think of all my teammates. Here's a tip, Robert. They're all going to be there."
That's right.
Politics, as you suggested, reared its ugly head in the realm of baseball this week, Charlie. A 15th anniversary celebration of the film Bull Durham was to have been held at the Baseball Hall of Fame, but it's been canceled apparently because folks at the hall don't like the politics of the guys who starred in the movie.
No, one folk at the hall, this guy Dale Petrosky, a former Reagan-era communications apparatchik, smeared Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon by saying that their anti-war remarks would, quote, ultimately could put our troops even more danger. This is typical of the kind of really kind of brutal rhetoric that's come out of, you know, in response to anyone who criticizes the current Avignon presidency. If the baseball writers of America have the integrity God gave the common dog, they will all refuse the Hall of Fame ballot until this particular thug gets thrown out of his job.
Finally, Charlie, the soccer players who labor for Sheffield United in England's first division have discovered a new and pleasing pregame source of carbohydrates, chocolate rice sandwiches, which, as I understand it, were not initially developed for pro athletes.
Well, not for full-grown pro athletes. Anyway, they're actually one of the things that you know, British mommies and nannies give their toddlers to keep them happy when they're hungry. Real men play for Sheffield United. Can't you see there is already a cottage industry around the Premier League of people thinking up chants about this.
Charlie Pierce writes for the Boston Sunday Globe magazine, and he joins me each week here on Only a Game. Thank you, Charlie.
Please, coach, may I have my chewy?
The bulk of the email this week came in response to my commentary in last week's show, in which I mentioned that some Canadian hockey fans and young players had insulted the members of a visiting team of American children. A crummy deal, as I said. Then I supposed that the boorish behavior had come as a result of the fear and powerlessness some people were feeling as a result of the war the U.S. had brought to Iraq. In response, Paul Brillaud of North Andover, Massachusetts wrote, "Bill Littlefield has managed to do what Bill Clinton, Tom Daschle, Trent Lott, and Rush Limbaugh never could. He insulted me, personally and painfully." Mr. Brillaud went on to ask, "Why is my tax money going to support your socialist left-wing agenda?" Mark O. Dietrich, a WBUR listener, called my comments, quote, "incredibly stupid, outrageous, and neo-fascist," and urged me to limit my commentary to, quote, "cocktail parties with wealthy friends from the fascist oligarchy of the left. The acronym is FOOL." Richard DiTullio heard the commentary as an excuse for the vulgar behavior of the Canadian fans and players, and he wrote, "In the face of such hostility, it is not the time to wonder if our leaders have frightened the Canadians. Get some backbone and ditch the PC nonsense." Ian P. Hamby wrote, quote, "Your apology for the behavior of those Canadians nestles you in the ranks of cowards, sir. I have long been a listener to Vermont Public Radio and a contributor. You have called that relationship into question." Susan Elder of Aiken, South Carolina, shared that sentiment and wrote, "I hope you never coach any American children." Willard McCoy, who hears Only a Game on WAMC in Albany, New York, had this to say in response to the commentary, "You correctly place the blame where it belongs, upon our leaders' heads. Thank you, and God bless you." And Cornelia Howell, who lives in Montreal and hears the program on Vermont Public Radio, wrote, "Thank you for your comments. You didn't blame the Canadian fans, which you had every right to do. Their behavior was unacceptable, but you put things in perspective. Keep up the good work." There was a little email about some other subjects late Tuesday night after the women's basketball team from Connecticut had beaten the one from Tennessee to win its third national championship in 4 years. Judy Cook wrote, "Come on, Charlie Pierce, say some more stupid stuff about Gino Auriemma." And several listeners, among them Mary Malmros, a WAMC listener, and Dr. David Warren, who hears us on WLRN in Miami, wrote to urge me to see the movie Bend It Like Beckham. I did on Sunday night, and it's terrific. You can email us by visiting the website, onlyagame.org. We live at 890 Commonwealth Avenue, Boston, Massachusetts, 02215. You can leave a comment on the listener line by calling 617-353-1860.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Century 21 Real Estate, featuring 165 full-service brokerage offices throughout Massachusetts on the web at century21.com/MA. We're also funded by the Elephant Walk Restaurant in Porter Square, featuring their innovative menu of Cambodian and French cuisine. Ample complimentary parking available, menus and reservations at elephantwalk.com. Major support for Only a Game comes from Bicon Dental Implants, offering discerning patients a same-day tooth replacement solution for failed root canal treated or missing teeth. Information is available online at Bicon.com or at 800-88-BICON. This is the WBUR Spring Fundraiser. We pause briefly to turn to you, our listeners. It's an opportunity for you to do your part of the partnership. You support the news, the programming here on WBUR. It's your opportunity to give us a call, make a contribution to support the news. 1-800-909-9287.
You know, Dolores, one of the commentators, one of the writers who wrote to Bill in the last segment mentioned tax dollars, and I think that it's probably worthwhile to talk about that just a little bit. There's that misconception out there all the time that this program and these radio stations get a lot of tax money. Well, the fact is that only 8% of WBUR's budget comes from federal grants, and that money is directly dependent upon the money that we raise from our community. So it's not tax dollars that are keeping this show going. It's the money from people just like you, people who are listening right now. If you like Only a Game, if you enjoy what we do, the best way to say that you do is to pick up the phone and make that call, 1-800-909-9287.
Or you can go online at WBUR.org. We talk about the broad perspective of news. What about the broad perspective in the world of sports? We get that on Only a Game. Give us a call, 1-800-909-9287.
Steve, I think a lot of interesting points came as a result of that that letter segment. One of the things that is fascinating to me is the way people really feel that this is their program, and they take it very seriously, and they want me to know what they think about what they've heard. And quite frequently, I get into exchanges of email with these folks and become friendly, even with people who initially are not happy with what I've said or with something that's been on the program. It's really quite a nice extension of what we're doing to have so many people feel as if they have a part of the program. And they write us and they suggest story ideas. You got to cover my cousin. He's a water skier for Colby College in Maine. It's whatever it might be. And it's great fun.
They care enough to write because they know you care enough to respond. Lots of times people just feel helpless, unable to respond to people, not feeling that they can be a part of the conversation, that they're not respected enough to have their points of view responded to. These are people who look to WBUR, the programming here, every day as a source of information, sometimes entertainment, the kinds of moments you get, those driveway moments. I could see myself if I happened to be on the road at 7 o'clock in the morning, sitting in my driveway, not wanting to miss a second of Only a Game because of some great interview on that show. I know you feel that way an awful lot, so give us a call at 1-800-909-9287.
It really is an exchange of a relationship here. The show goes out every week. It's responded to very strongly and articulately. And also, during the time of a fundraiser, we hope that you will make a pledge to keep the program going and developing. 1-800-909-9287. That's the number to call to make your pledge.
For those of you unconvinced that your support ensures the quality of the programs that you listen to on WBUR and WRNI, we offer part two of Only a Game on a Shoestring, and we aren't referring to catches in the outfield, but to our budget. Without the continued support of listeners like you, Only a Game might start sounding something like this. I'm Bill Littlefield. We have a phone line. Call waiting is open. We're talking sports. Colleen from Beantown, you're next.
Yeah, just checking your order. One big spot pizza?
That Colleen from Beantown. Yeah, I'll be down to pick it up during our lengthy but interminable Swap Talk segment, during which our listeners prattle on about the latest sports trade rumors.
We can deliver.
Yeah, but then I'd have to tip.
Oh, yeah. It's Littlefield. Hey, since when has Only a Game been a call-in show?
Well, since most of the people who listen to and appreciate Only a Game week in and week out haven't called in with their pledges.
So no more insightful stories, features, and commentary?
Nope.
No more profiles of interesting athletes? Conversations with authors and poets?
Not a one.
No more Charlie Pierce?
Not a chance.
That means no more Super Bowl haiku poetry.
Alas,
that's
even
the
that
last
is...
straw. How much you need?
Is it over? Are Colleen and that obnoxious host gone? Can I come out from behind my life-size cardboard cutout of Willie Mays? Okay, seriously, though, if you appreciate the kind of intelligence and perspective only a game brings to sports coverage, please go to the phone to pledge your support of WBUR and WRNI.
Give us a call at 1-800-909-9287. I love that accent. She appreciates all the wonderful things about WBUR's Only a Game. And if you would miss that Super Bowl haiku poetry, all those wonderful offerings from Only a Game, make sure it keeps coming your way. Make a contribution at 1-800-909-9287.
And let me personally tip my cap to something about Only a Game that very few people mention, the music. There is a tremendous intelligence behind the music chosen for this show. If you don't smile or chuckle at one or two of the segues during the show during any one week, you're just not listening carefully enough. 1-800-909-9287 is the phone number to call. It's a really great show. And all it deserves for your response is a pledge in the amount that you think it's worth to you. We would suggest something like $60. That would be, say, $5 a month for a year's worth of Only a Game, or $365 if you make that year-long pledge of a dollar a day for our news service and Only a Game. We'll send you the Only a Game fleece jacket as our gift. So make that pledge, 1-800-909-9287.
We're funded by you, our listeners, when you call us at 1-800-909-9287. Invite Nutter, McLennan, and Fish, working to solve critical legal issues on local, national, and international levels. Information at Nutter.com. TechFusion.com, 24/7 data recovery specialist. TechFusion helps prevent data disasters from happening now and in the future. TechFusion.com, where data is never lost. And by Innuendo, offering unique window coverings and featuring the complete Hunter Douglas collection, including Duet, Silhouette, and Luminette shadings. Hunter Douglas at Innuendo, Route 9 in Natick.
Dolores and Steve, it's been great hearing you say such nice things about the program this morning, and I hope that people are listening. I hope they're listening every week, and I hope they understand that this is one of those times where we ask them to act on their appreciation of the program and call us up.
It's that simple, really. A response to one of Bill's commentaries in a letter form or an email form is terrific. But a response right now with your pledge is what we really need to keep the program going and developing. You know, 10 years is a long time for a program to be on the air and for the creativity of the show to sustain itself, for the folks here in the production staff to do what they need to do, for Karen and Gabe to continue each week to come up with good ideas. They need that inspiration that your support provides. So make that pledge now, 1-800-909-9287.
And you want more than just Only a Game on a shoestring. You appreciate when you can have a reporter do underwater diving to bring you tales from way deep down.
See, the only problem with doing those little sketches, those little skits, is that people are going to figure that if we get the money we need, we won't have to do the funny sketches and skits anymore. But I promise you, we will continue to do the shtick and to have as much fun producing this program every week as we have been having for 9.5 years now. As a matter of fact, we'll be so inspired by your contribution, we'll probably get even funnier and have more fun.
With good contributions, the show will get better. 1-800-909-9287. Onward and upward with Only a Game and your pledge. So make that pledge now. Once again reminding you,